Welcome to the Corporate Treasury 101 podcast. In today's episode, we discuss fraud trends in 2024 with Baptiste Collot. Baptiste has a varied background, having co-founded Trustpur, a payment fraud prevention platform, and serving as its CEO. He's an expert in finance, treasury management, and web communication development. Trustpur leads in payment fraud prevention for big companies globally since 2017, answering secure P2P processes with automation and intuitive risk management. In today's episode, expect to learn what have been the dominant fraud trends impacting businesses in the last few years, how do regional differences affect fraud occurrences and characteristics, especially regarding hacking, deepfakes, and sophisticated phishing, what is the concept of cyber era of fraud, and how are cyber elements becoming more prevalent in modern fraud schemes, how Trustpur has enabled a client to detect or prevent a potential fraud attempt, and like always, much, much more. As a fellow former treasurer who's French and now founder and CEO of a renowned fraud prevention SaaS company, Baptiste was a pleasure to have on the show, full of insights, and we actually had quite some fun. We really hope you will enjoy the episode. If that is the case, and when you're thinking about how you found our podcast, chances are that it was through word of mouth, social media, or a recommendation from your favorite podcast platform. And this is our only request to you. The best way you can support the podcast for free, wherever you are listening to this, is to head to Apple Podcasts, search for Corporate Treasury 101, and give us a 5-star review. That will mean the world to us and help more people learn about treasury. And with all that being said, please welcome Baptiste Collot. Baptiste, thank you so much for coming on the Corporate Treasury 101 podcast. Today, we are going to talk about the fraud trends in 2024 and to be victim of those fraud trends myself at a personal level. I'm very curious to jump into this episode. So maybe to begin with, what have been the dominant fraud trends impacting businesses in the last few years? What have you seen yourself and at Trustpur?
Yes, well, fraud have been really booming over the last years. I think it's not a surprise for anybody. We all see fraud attempts making the headlines of all the news. And the big trend that we found over the last year is that, especially in the US, 96% of US businesses have been targeted by, or been hit by fraud actually last year. And what is impressive is not this number, but the evolution over a year, because it's like a 76% of evolution over a year, from roughly 50 or 60% to 96%. That is really the most crazy rise that you can probably have in this kind of threat. And so the main trend behind this is the rise of AI in the fraud schemes. And I'm sure that you probably expected AI coming in this topic, but really it went very fast. But really, fraud, we moved a couple of years ago from a very manual fraud scheme where you had some really fraudster trying to understand how a company works, etc., doing some intel over a couple of weeks or months until doing one very well-organized attack. But today, fraudsters are just using very high-tech means to proceed to their fraud attempts, and that's how they can do it at scale, basically. And so that's how you get more than 80% of fraud involving cyber attacks in the attempts. And this is very, very impressive.
I mean, the numbers are completely crazy. So I understand that with the rise of AI, you can indeed, like, it's not only automation anymore, it's like diversity of fraud attempts and like the type of things you can do that just explode. But wouldn't you expect that people are just more ready for it as well? Isn't it what should be happening? Okay, the means to defraud are increasing, but so are the defense mechanism, no?
Cool. Well, it's always one thing. The person who the attack is, as always, one step in advance to defense. So clearly, the reason why fraud exploded is because the defense is not here yet. And because typically, while all the corporate world was fighting with manual means. Well, you know, there is a strong difference between the weapon used by a fraudster and the defense line, which is basically manual manual controls and callbacks when it comes to this kind of vendor payment fraud. And so, of course, the defense is not at the right level in the corporate world, but the means to defend are here. I mean, this is why we exist with Transpair for 6 years now, and this is how we help corporate to be always at the top of the game in terms of fraud prevention. So yes, they could, but you know, it's long time. You need some education on the long time and the long term too, and the adoption of technology to make sure that you can really prevent this kind of fraud.
So the 96% is really crazy, because so at a personal level, I'm now in France. I don't know what's going on, but you receive all those calls saying like, hey, your electricity provider is having something like discount kind of whatsoever, and I need to call back. And you can imagine that this is basically a fraud attempt. When you see 96% of the companies in the US, that's as per your report, facing at least one fraud attempt per year, you're like, but there is no way the authorities, the police, whoever is in charge of this, just take the proper measure for this not to happen. So what's the solution? Like, how do you make sure that those fraudsters are properly persecuted and, like, you know, attacked in justice? How can you make that work?
Well, I don't think that you can really manage this, because this is a global threat, meaning that you try to, and of course, at the national level and international level, you have some rules, fights, coordination to try to ensure that these criminal networks cannot operate. But at the end, you look at what happened over the last decades. Criminal organizations have been more and more powerful because they use more and more digital means, meaning that for me, the question is really how you can prevent this threat at your level, being a corporate, being a financial institution. How you make sure that you prevent this with the right process, with the right operation, with the right tools. And of course, you can always expect that, well, the police will make the job, and what if they don't? And if I go a bit more on this topic, you can expect, being a corporate, that the bank will make the job to help you prevent fraud, but what if they don't? And so at the end, this is your own responsibility, because when it comes to vendor payment fraud, there is always a theft of identity. Ensuring the identity of someone is so complex today, because you never know who you're talking to, you never know who you have on the phone, you never know who is the person who sends the email, is the right one or not. You never know if the person who will onboard on your website or on your platform is the one that you expect. So how can you manage this? At the end, this is just an issue related with data. Vendor payment fraud is an issue 100% related with the accuracy of the data that you're managing, your systems. And at the end, this payment part is, well, just a technical piece. The whole question is how you are sure that the data that will be used in for a payment is correct. You never sue the post office for sending a letter to the wrong address if you just put the wrong address on the letter, right? Well, when with payments, this is exactly the same, you know. Like, banks are just like the post, and they move a payment from one bank to another. But you have the responsibility to put the right address or the right bank account in that case in the order.
Yeah, you cannot blame the middleman, unfortunately. That makes sense. So do you see, maybe a bit of a stupid question, but do you see differences between countries or maybe regions? For instance, are the kind of numbers of fraud attempts in the US versus, I don't know, Europe or APAC or any other part of the world different? Like, do you see a difference in numbers, but also a difference in ways frauds are conducted?
Well, honestly, I think that you always target the company that have, fraudster try to make the job the most easy for them. So they go where the money is, you know. Makes sense. So at the end, we see that fraud schemes, because they are so automated today, are completely global. We see some needs everywhere in any countries where you have high volume of money. And on our side, we are really focused on corporate fraud, meaning that we clearly see that any large companies have this issue anywhere they are over the globe. And so this is a global threat. This is a global market for this criminal organization. And so they play it exactly as a classic business for them. So if the business is global, well, they will play globally as well. And today, probably that a few years ago, it was more complex because, again, you had to be very specific when they targeted organization. But today, you can speak any language, the language that you want, with an AI in the middle. So both orally, writtenly, etc. This is language is not a blocker anymore. Well, it was, and so that makes it much more easier and push for globalization for fraudster.
So tell us a bit more about those kind of fraud concepts, because in your white paper you cover quite some, and I learned a lot reading it because I was like, oh, that's interesting, I didn't even know that was possible. So Latis, can you walk us through some fraud attempt concepts that you see eventually offer us a bit of a solution here as well? Like, what should we be doing to combat each of them?
Well, again, just think about this. Fraud, when it comes to vendor payment fraud, is about data. So you can imagine all the possibilities that you could find a way, all the way that you could find to get your bank account or fraudulent bank account to be used in the context of a payment. So you will get, of course, a more general one today will be the vendor set of identity for a vendor. Typically, you receive an email or phone call or sometimes just an invoice that seems legit, but which is not, because the fraudster just took the identity of your vendor. They know super well the relation that you have with them. How they did that? Well, today, in the vast majority of the cases, there is a cyber attack in the middle, meaning they will not attack the company directly, they will attack the vendor. So they will hack the vendor, usually email domain, and send an email that seems really legit, because in the flow of the previous email, etc., with the right tone, having all the good context, etc., and you say, hey, by the way, Guillaume, we just changed the bank account, so the treasury team asked me to share you this new bank account, thank you, and whoop, jumping back to the previous topic. And so, because the context is perfect, you might just believe it's okay, because it's really in the middle of a legit conversation. So that's why this is the most common fraud attempts that we see today. And it is really hard to prevent, because the question is, okay, if I answer back, I trust the email. So I will answer back to the email. So maybe I will have to call, et cetera, et cetera. It seems easy to identify when you take it one by one. But when you consider a few people managing thousands or dozens of thousands of vendors, sometimes millions of individuals that need to be controlled, it's absolutely impossible, because it's like a wave of data that need to be controlled by a few individuals. That's really the main issue. So fraud scheme is really this one, vendor impersonification through email or phone call usually. And then you have the classic one that can be used as well. It will be more hack in your own systems. We have seen that your client, you have a cyber attacks. You don't know which data has been modified or not. And so it's a big issue in this case as well. You never know if one day you will use a fraudulent bank account. You have the internal fraud, which is something that people don't like to talk about, but all the survey as well reveals that internal fraud is still something really important today. It's not the classic, you know, fraudster in that case. It's not like a criminal profile. It's just someone who, for a particular reason, one day will just start taking money from a corporate account saying, hey, I need this, maybe I will reimburse, and then, well, it's a spiral and it's really hard to get out from this. So at the end, it can come from every third party in the organization, external and internal. And I think the most crazy one that we everybody heard about is this amazing deep fake that we that have been released a few weeks ago. Fraudster used a video like a Zoom call, and while this person from individual from the AP team was absolutely convinced that he was talking to all the legit people in the room because it was a deep fake with video, voice, etc. So how can you just believe that you have 10 people in a room and they are all fake? It's crazy, but this is real. And the loss was pretty big, $25 million. Well, starts to be a pretty significant amount.
So a lot to unpack here, and I love that. Not in the sense of that's amazing, but in the sense of that's so interesting. Like, it's fascinating. Deepfakes, for the people who don't know about this, can you quickly explain what a deepfake is, and like just take a classic example of what a deepfake would be?
Yes, a deepfake is the use of AI, generative AI, in the context of this kind of call or video. Basically, we could use deepfake here, and someone else could speak at my place, and the AI will produce as a video and the audio and reproduce my voice. You can do this by using some sample of previous interviews, etc. So you will feed the AI with samples of video and audio, and well, at the end you get something very, very impressive in terms of result, and that makes it almost impossible to detect.
Yeah. No, it's absolutely crazy. And I had a streamer talk about this. Like, now there are so many recordings of everybody on the internet, whatever you're doing. If you're like a minimum public, if you've put some pieces of content out there, you are at risk that a fraudster just tries to forge your identity and like records your voice, records a different text, calls your bank and say, hey, make me a wire transfer to this bank account. And eventually that can happen. So there are additional kind of line of defenses that have been put in place by people, but it's absolutely crazy. And for the one that you explained around hacking, it's actually super interesting to see that the one being hacked is not the ultimate frauded person. Not sure the English here, but in the sense that the fraudster hacks the vendor, gets the information from them, and then goes to the client to say, hey, pay me on this bank account because we have changed XYZ. So it's not even only your lines of defense that are at risk, but you need to make sure that the people you work with have a decent amount level of fraud prevention. Otherwise, you might just get this kind of request and you'll be like, yeah, sure.
I think it's really about that. Fraud was very manual. Today, fraud has to be considered almost as a cyber risk. So you need to check all the vendors that you're working with, of course. And it's part of a more global cyber risk prevention policy in the company. And this is where usually the question is, well, you know, we managed this for years, so we had a few fraud attacks, and it's okay. We train our team. Until now, we succeeded in blocking this fraud attempt, so we should be okay. And this is really the question about, are really people aware of what is happening outside, and that they are probably not the right perception of the evolution of the threat that has been really evolving super fast over the last years. And so the defense I will provide is not adapted at all, or was adapted a few years ago. This is usually the discussion that we have with them. Well, you have a great process. I mean, your internal audit team did a great job, or you did a great job. Everything is perfectly written in a fraud prevention policy, etc. Well, we all know that any process is perfectly, usually well designed when it comes to security. But the breach comes from all the human, and usually it is a human, even if technology is involved, because one time the process could not be respected. And this is a the events that you want to prevent. Of course, every day your team is aware, your team will make the controls that is expected, etc. But one day you have some holidays, people moving, taking some time off, etc. You have some turnover in the team. People are not trained to the new process. You have some time where you periods where you will have a lot of works, and so you won't have the same level of presence, you know, or awareness about this kind of threat. So, and this is where you will not be able to respect the process, and that you won't have the right focus, and that you will eventually get this fraud happened and get a loss at the company level, and probably at the individual level as well, because the impact is much more important than just bottom line of the company.
So, Baptiste, the $1 million question here is, what do you do about it? Like, what's the solution? And if the proper process cannot be respected exactly, as you said, right, it's because it's an exceptional situation, but that's when it happens. So what are the solutions? What can you do? So maybe you can walk us through a bit what you do at TrustBear, but like, how do you combat that?
What is important is start with the beginning. Usually when you discuss fraud prevention, the way corporates think about it is, okay, my bank will have my back. Historically, it was the main thing that, yes, my bank has some fraud prevention tools, etc., and so they might have my back. Okay, that's one point. The second is, we have great process and we keep training our team on this process. And this is where I think people are keep focusing on this, even when you go to trade shows, etc. Hey, fraud prevention, train your team. Repeat the same thing. And we know that it's not because you repeat a message that the message is well understood or is well adapted to the person who will receive it. And so that's where it's really important to consider fraud not only as like, here is a fraud prevention policy, but how you will manage this at an individual level, how you will manage the cases where the process cannot be respected. Let me be more specific. I really believe that today, if you consider fraud prevention, you have two layers. You have the layer of the team, so you need to train people. This is absolutely key, because at the end, you have people in the organization. People is always where the fraud comes in. And because we are all human, so you can try to do your best. One day you have a weakness and this is where you need to be backed. And this is where the second layer is really the technology. And you need to make sure that technology supports the human and human supports the technology. And I think this is really, in terms of fraud prevention, I really like this idea of both zero trust, which means that you must not trust any data that is coming from anywhere, and you need to challenge this data. And both, you need to be much more individual focused when it comes to technology. Make sure that every individual can be backed by a technology, but as well that if there is a threat, they know how to react and they know where to react and using the technology. So in terms of vendor payment fraud prevention, if you consider what happens, at the end there is a payment. And usually and historically, Treasury had the responsibility of the security of vendor of payments, what any kind of payment. And that's why today when we speak about, okay, payment fraud, Treasurer has always have the first to raise the hand saying, hey, okay, this is my topic. But they inherit from data they are not in charge of controlling. And this is the reality. If you take a global procure-to-pay process, you have the vendor onboarding, then the procurement team or vendor onboarding teams will be involved in this. So a lot of data will be collected at this stage. Then you will have some AP where you might have the vendor master data stored in an ERP with other thousands of vendors or dozens of thousands of vendors. And then when AP will prepare the payments, Treasury will have the responsibility to push this payment to the banks. So a lot of people are involved in this process. And if you want to prevent fraud, you need to consider everybody. You won't prevent fraud just by building a wall at the end of the process. You need to make sure that you will have different layers of controls of this data to make sure that the process is respected and to make sure that the data that you are using at each step of this process is legit and accurate over time.
Wow. Love that. I was going to ask you, okay, but how do we train people? I think that's pretty much it. It's like considering the whole chain. It's not just a responsibility of one person. There is a whole chain of command to be respected, talking to each other, understanding where it can happen and what are the safeguards on each of those weaker part of the chain to make sure like, hey, if something happens here, that's the thing to do. Love that. One thing you mentioned, I was going to go on something different. I would like to talk about ChatGPT generated text messages, but let's wrap up on this one first, Baptiste. So what were you up to say?
No, so at the end, it's easy to say that, and you want everybody to respect the process, that you want some great data, etc. How do you do that? Well, you do that, and this is what we help our clients doing using TrustPair. What is TrustPair? TrustPair is a single platform, like a one-stop shop to prevent vendor payment fraud in an organization. What we allow our clients to do is to automate the bank account validation. So ensure, validate the identity of the vendor, validate that the bank account belongs to this vendor. This is really one of the most crucial thing. And then ensure...
Fundamental. But so how do you do that? Sorry to jump in here. How do you do that, Baptiste? Like you, if the fraudster is using a fake email address from the domain of the vendor, if it's in the flow, why can TrustPair do it where a treasurer, say, cannot? How do you do that?
Well, basically, we don't trust the data coming from our clients. So we don't trust, so we don't really care where he got his data from. And what...
But it's in the name, but it's TrustPair.
Yes, but our mission is to make sure that we can bring back this trust in this process. And we help our clients to bring back reinforce the trust they have with their vendor and their data. Because if you are suspicious with everybody, well, it starts to be hard to get good relationships on a daily basis. So this is really our mission, how we help our clients to reinforce this trust by not spending too much time to doing these manual controls, but by delegating these controls to TrustPair. And so what we do, we're not doing any magic at TrustPair. We rely on data. And so the data that we use basically to confirm a bank account is we will get information from external data sources to confirm the identity of a vendor. So really ensuring that this is a legit vendor or company is the first important thing. We'll do the same about the bank account, and then we'll go directly to external data sources to banks basically to make sure that this bank account belongs to a company. So we really go to the freshest source of data when it comes to bank account validation. The question is, how do you do when there is no data source? When there is no data source, we have what we call the TrustPair network. TrustPair network is all the vendors that we got from our clients that we onboarded over time and that we keep onboarding on a daily basis, where we will make sure that we can validate the identity that bank account belongs to a vendor by reaching out directly to the vendor with several steps of tech identity verification, avoiding scams, etc., etc. Basically, what a treasury department could try to do just with its own means, low tech means, so meaning an email, a phone call, etc. Well, we will bring this process to the next level with a lot of tech and security to make sure that at the end, the bank account belongs to the vendor. And third part, which is highly important, you can't always have an answer. And if you get like someone saying, hey, I will manage 100% of your cases, will be a complete lie. I mean, it's impossible to reach out to anybody on this planet, etc. So you need to, and this is where technology backs the human and where there is a great complementarity between the user, so the person trained to manage this control, and the platform, because we provide all the intelligence that we have and we collected to our client, even if we are not able to tell him 100% that this bank account belongs or that does not belong to a vendor. And this is where human has the key. In terms of security, you don't want the human to make 100% of the control. You want him to be very focused and understand when there is a risk. We will be able to manage this risk. We have the right information. We have the right report, the right alert, real-time alert, and the ability to manage this and to get 100% of the controls in the radar and not like controls that can be done by one individual in the organization which is the one that will lead to a fraud at the end, if it makes sense.
100%. And I like that. I like that transparency and honesty, to be honest. It's very good to be able to say, look, we won't have the answer to 100% of the cases, but what you can be sure is that we will make all we can to get the answer to the remaining 0.5% of the cases where we don't have an answer straight away. But at least you'll be protected, and that makes lots of sense.
Exactly. Your question at the end is not to say, hey, I have automated 100% of my control. What you want to defend with your board is we are best in class in fraud prevention because we can manage both automation and what cannot be automated with the highest level of security. And this is it. There is always this trade-off in security. What can you automate? What can be automated? And how you can manage this securely?
Talk to me about ChatGPT generated text messages. And that's not me trying to surf on buzzwords, but I pretty much liked this one. So what is that, and how do fraudsters use ChatGPT?
I guess fraudsters use ChatGPT like anybody else, meaning you have a need and you ask ChatGPT to answer this need, basically. So, and when it comes to writing content, logical context, with all the context, etc., makes a lot of sense to ask ChatGPT or any other alternative AI to say, hey, okay, give your brief and you say, hey, I want to target this company. I feed with all the emails. So basically, if you add the ability to hack an email address, you just download all the history of emails. You try to find who is the right person. You ask to ChatGPT to identify the right person or all the contacts involved in the email. And then we say, okay, what is the last conversation, etc., and build the next message and ingest the fact that we are changing our bank account now. I mean, it's so easy. Straightforward, right?
Yeah, 100%. But it's stupidly easy. So, of course, people are going to do it. I don't remember when I was keying in ChatGPT, but ChatGPT was like, hey, sorry. I think it was like, hey, give me some personal information about a guest that was about to come. Like, hey, what can you find? Fun facts or personal information that I can use during the interview to like create link with the guest. And ChatGPT answers something like, hey, so we don't give that type of information. Yeah, because to respect privacy and data protection and so on and so forth. Wouldn't you imagine that OpenAI would come up with something like this for frauds as well? Like, it's a clear attempt to, I don't know, defraud somebody. Like, hey, here is a list of messages. Make you like take the identity of that person and just change something that is money related. Isn't it something that ChatGPT would have safeguards on?
I think if you try to ask ChatGPT some stuff where you directly express that you want to do something bad, they will ask or warn you that, okay, you are not supposed to use ChatGPT for criminal stuff, etc., etc. But the way you ask it, saying, hey, take this list of email, find the right stuff and the right information, and just mention that we are as well changing the bank account, well, it can be legit. And this is always the thing with technology. Is technology an opportunity or a threat? Well, I think that back like 40 years ago, back 40 years ago, nobody would say that the web was a threat more than an opportunity. So this is, as usual, for me, a bit of nonsense to think that this way. And just, well, you have a way to optimize something and you have threats coming with it. You have a car when you run like 50 kilometers. Well, the threat is well managed. Tomorrow, if you run 200 kilometers with the same car, well, your choice, but it's and it's the opportunity to be really at the same final point much faster. But you will probably need to get your an additional bell or whatever and more security to make sure that at the end, if whatever happens before the headline, you're safe. It's the same with security. You take it, you want to go faster, etc. Well, you consider the risk as well, and you make sure that you prevent this risk and it is managed. This is just as simple as that.
Love it. There is something you talk about in your white paper, Mathis, which is the domino effect. Now, not only is that a cool name, but it's also intriguing. What is the domino effect? What do you mean by that?
Yes. So basically, the domino effect is the butterfly effect. Yeah, for it's quite the same. You have a first event that will drive consequences on the long term. And so basically, this is where we say that, okay, you have with fraud, you have the impact on the bottom line. But we have seen organization where because the fraud was too important and because the process was not respected, you get some people who lose their job. They get fired because, well, the company found it was a responsibility. So you get someone else. So you have a turnover. So given that you know that turnover is never a good thing for the organization, you lose the confidence, you lose the experience, you will lose the knowledge with the vendor as well. So it's like really you have a lot of effects at the end. And this is what we call the domino effect, because let me give you a very concrete example that illustrate this very well. We have a client who have been hit by this fraud. It was a big European organization working with a big European, big US organization. They know them very well. They have like dozens of millions of invoices in both sides each year. And well, the European one received an email saying asking to change the bank information. They do it. They pay over the next month, and then an additional email, legit this time, ask to change the bank account a new time. They take the new bank account and they keep paying and they start paying on the new bank account. Year end, everybody is doing the year closing and a few months later, they come back saying, hey, you know what? You didn't pay us these invoices, etc. It was not a warning for them because there are, you know, a lot of movement, money movement in both sides. So they just said, hey, these two invoices are missing. And they said, no, we paid you. We paid on this bank account. Yes, but this bank account is not our bank account. Yes, but we received an email from your email domain. So this is your responsibility because you are being hacked. You sent us an email. It was legit for us since this is the email that I've always been used. And so no way we pay two times the same invoice. So there is a trial. And the trial is taking years before the settlement. And so this is how you get a real, very concrete impact on the relation between two, like a vendor or supplier and a client. It's very concrete. And so at the end, you never know during years that you have like a multi-millions, dozen of million of bill that nobody knows who will take the loss at the end. And well, it's so concrete. This is really the domino effect.
So this touches upon so many critical stuff. One of the questions I was going to ask you, Baptiste, is what are the main consequences of fraud? Because of course, you have the financial impact. Okay, it's money. But it's not only that. It's your reputation. And I think you just highlighted it perfectly. Like, something like that happens, of course, both parties will be like, hey, it's not my fault, it's yours. Hey, but no, it's not mine, it's yours. Oh, actually, you know, there is a bit of a juridic void. I'm not sure that's the English version of it. But like, so all of a sudden, the reputation is tarnished. You don't have that much of a good relationship with your vendor anymore. Let alone if anybody in the industry learns it, like, hey, this vendor has been hacked, so be careful. And like all of a sudden, you might want to deal less with that person and more with another one with competition. Like, it has an impact on business and trust. We had recently on the show Matt Cornwall, who has a crazy story. And he was talking about the effect. So he had three Black Swan events in a row, like in 6 months. One of them was a cyber attack. And he explains the impact that it has on the morale of employees, like the mood overall. Like, employees are just like, they feel guilty, and then they're like, but we cannot do anything anymore without, you know, risking to lose millions, because that's what happens for treasurers when they validate payments or like move bank accounts. That's what happens. It's millions on a day-to-day basis. And like, it has all those domino effects, quite the word, not only on the financials, but on this whole range of things, which is completely crazy. How, or more should I say, are companies ready to fight the cyber era of fraud, Baptiste?
I would say some of them are. The majority are probably not. I think everybody is aware of the cyber risk today. And I think in the surveys that we released, a lot of companies feel that they have a good awareness about the risk of cyber fraud, etc. Again, for me, the issue is that they think that the cyber risk is something a bit global, that you have this IT team doing some stuff to help the company managing this risk will, you know, firewall, antivirus, a lot of automated tools that will prevent fraud. And then you have at your level, never use like a USD storage or hard disk. Don't click on a link in a mail. Watch everything. Be careful, etc. Okay, it's always the same kind of speech. What we see is more and more cyber risk will be managed at an individual level, meaning that the tool needs to identify the risk for the user, for the individual in the company, and allowing him to take a decision about what we should do now. In the context of fraud prevention, this is a cyber risk. What you want is having really this insight saying, okay, there is a risk here. Here is what you can do. Here is the options. Don't act alone, etc. And it's the answer needs to be very specific for the use case and not just, okay, there is a fraud, try to think about what was the last training you had and the general concepts that you should apply in that case, you know? And so it's a continuous training with the tools that you are using on a daily basis. And this is what really, for me, is a trend. Do not rely on only general trainings. Ensure that your teams have almost daily trainings with the tool they are using that will help them navigate the threat. And not just like having a guy in the dark room with many screens and some black code, you know, who will identify cyber attacks, who will get a report, and you might never talk again. Because this is really, it's funny, but this is a bit how it happens, what happens, and how cyber risk is considered in large organization. Just because this is how it was perceived over the last years, it was probably the right way to do it. But now you need to make your team accountable, and to make sure that your team are accountable and to help them being accountable, they need the right tool and there is a right way to identify the risk and to react to this risk. Because what you don't want to do is, hey, we have a risk, so we don't do anything. Oh, you need to pay, you need to act, you need to move, you need to keep moving. I think the worst thing today, if you believe you stand and you wait, you're dead, right? You're dead.
I'm curious to understand what the role of the government in all this is. And beyond the police, right? Because I'm thinking a major attack on a major US corporation. I'm saying US, but it can be Chinese, any superpower. A major attack on one of those companies can have a massive impact, no? on a macro level, more on a like geopolitical standpoint, because it could be like, hey, cyber attacks identified in Russia, I'm saying in the same country, but like via VPN, but actually rooted through country France, just to say something, but actually originating from Philippines, whatever. What's the role of the government in all this? Because they see the threat, right? Do they take any measures? Do you see them saying, okay, there is this massive program or plan that we can put in place to make some kind of education and like defense mechanism? I don't know. Is there anything like this?
I think, of course, when you consider just the economic impact, any global threat has an impact on the economy. And so I think the great thing is there is a lot of collaboration, international collaboration to prevent criminal organization, cyber attacks, etc. This is a reality. This is not my main domain, so I'm not the specialist in this domain, but there is a lot of collaboration, both at global, regional, and national level. An example about that, I think, is the regulation in Europe. Well, Europe really voted a new law to make sure that consumers can be protected against fraud when there are payment fraud, because consumers are hit by a lot of frauds. They are not well educated, etc., about that. So the awareness is complex. Try to explain payment fraud to my grandmother. Honestly, it's a bit hard. So they need to be protected because they don't have the way to prevent themselves. So I think this is really where states, etc., have something to do, bringing new regulation. But we know it takes time. We know that the technology and rules, when between new rules and the rule is applied and the technology applies it, etc., well, there are big gaps. So I think that, of course, there is big collaboration at an international level, because at the end, big cyber attacks are a threat for the global economy. And if you want the economy going well, you don't want to be suspicious. You need trust. If there is no trust, there is no good business. And of course, then you might have the issues about geopolitical attacks, but this is a completely different topic. And I think this is probably not the same level and the same answer that might be that might be taken. And honestly, I have no expertise to give my word about on this one.
This is definitely more expertise than we do have, Baptiste. So absolutely love it. So tell me, how do I make the business case for a solution like TrustPair or any fraud prevention system, process, project, tool, software, whatever, if I'm a treasurer? Because again, and I think that's quite well highlighted in your white paper. Actually, let me get the exact stats. But most people actually consider it will never happen to them. That's the big issue as well. Like, yeah, no, it's not something I'm concerned by. Yeah, it happens, but it's not gonna happen to me. But at the end of the day, it does. But also, when you have to pitch to a board, say, hey, I need that amount of money to put a proper process in place, to run a proper audit, to make a kind of as-is analysis, a design of where we want to be, and then implement a solution, that costs money. So how do you recommend treasurers or any people in the chain of command that you just mentioned, from procure to pay, build that business case? How do we do that?
I think it's quite rare in security that you get more security plus improvement of an existing process. And so an ROI with TrustPair is pretty easy to build, because since you have automation of existing manual tasks, you can easily say, hey, we will reduce the cost of manual tasks by 95%. So, well, there is this ROI associated with the automatization. And then there is the ROI associated with the reduction of the risk, which is probably the... Depending on the company, it can be more complicated to defend if the company itself says, hey, you know, we have been so good in fraud prevention that we won't be hit. So you need to explain that there is a new threat, et cetera, et cetera. But I mean, just take the airlines. So big names have lost a huge amount of money. And any 95% of companies says, we have been hit by a fraud attempts last year. So the question is not if we will be hit, but when we will be hit, and will we be ready by that time. And as a CFO, what you don't want is to make the headlines, basically, because your company lost a lot of money. So for a treasurer, I think what is really important is to consider the whole impact of these fraud prevention topics. And yes, it will involve different teams. The question is, what is the most important? Where do we start? Usually we see companies want something magic. I don't want to make any new manual controls anymore. And so I want something just perfect. Okay, let's. This is your dreams, and we will try to match the maximum of your dreams and explain you how it works and what can be done and what can't be done, and just understand what is your process, where is the risk, where you should, what are the actions you can take immediately to manage this risk, and then understand what can be done on the long term. Meaning, sometimes, for example, you will start using Trustpair as a web app. Stop doing callbacks, emails, etc. You use the platform. Step two might be, okay, you want native integration in your ERP, in your treasury systems. And so, of course, it's when you get this kind of complete automation over the whole procure-to-pay chain, it's a more secure thing that and process that you can get, but it takes more time, it costs more money. So this is project management. You have a risk, you identify this risk, you figure out how you can adapt your process in different phases to answer this risk, and you're all set.
Love that. So, Baptiste, we are arriving to the end of this episode, but what we like to end upon is an example. Can you give us an example, actually, of how Trustpair has enabled the client to detect or prevent a potential fraud attempt, if you can share? I don't know, anonymizing whatsoever, but it could be super interesting to see, okay, this is actually how much it can help.
The classic use case we have with our clients, they used to do manual callbacks, control, they receive email, they need to control a new bank account or change request on an existing vendor. So they send the information through the web app or automatically through their procurement of ERP to Trustpair. And we say, okay, basically, this bank account does not belong to this vendor. So we raise a red flag. And they say, hey, oh, yes, I really think that this is a legit request. Look, I have some emails, I have some proof. I received, like, this PDF looks great, etc. And we say, well, I know, data don't lie. Data don't lie. So we'll try to figure out. And an additional look, send us the documents that you have. And well, we have a fraud expert team on our side. So in this case, when our client tells us, okay, hey, I'm not sure, you know, okay, we will investigate a bit more. They sent us the documents and right away we found that it was not legit at all. And this is very concrete from the very beginning of your procure to pay chain. When you have new requests, etc., you just want to check your data. We don't want to check all the emails, etc. You have two data to submit. ID of the company, bank account will tell you, okay, green or red, do we identify a risk or not? This is a very concrete example. Second one is, and this is the main risk that you have with in the procure to pay chain. You can have, because you have several teams, procurement, AP, treasury, fraudster might use or target different teams. And communication used to be super bad in that case. In that case, so we identified the fraud at the procurement level. Basically, the vendor got the information directly from a vendor controlled within Trustpair, so it didn't push in the ERP. But the AP received the email, took the information, put it in the ERP. And here, without doing a check, and here, well, we identified the fraud because we had the connection with the ERP. But and this is just where process is not respected. And while the fraud was identified at the onboarding and procurement level, it was not considered at the AP level. So they were really lucky because basically we have the continuous monitoring of the vendor database on the ERP. So we blocked it. But if we will not have this implemented because they didn't respect the process again, no, they will probably have paid this new bank account. This is key, collaboration between teams, etc. So you need one platform to make sure that your team are accountable with the process, your process is respected, your data is accurate from vendor onboarding, ERP, and treasury systems.
And so the companies basically have you, and by you I mean Trustpair, not you personally, Baptiste, have Trustpair let them stop transactions within the ERP itself for the safety of money and the payments. So you can go as far as like just getting into there, into the software, into the ERP, and say, no, this one doesn't pass until we have cleared it and we have made sure that it's not a fraud attempt. In this case, it was. Super interesting.
Absolutely. We are the preferred partner of SAP in terms of fraud prevention. We provide native integration, for example, with SAP. We block vendors in SAP. We ensure we provide the right information to the team in charge of managing this vendor's database. And they will have the ability with a workflow to unlock this vendor if they wish to unlock it, to bypass TrustPair basically. But at least there is a workflow and we have several people who will be involved in this. So of course, ensuring that this data is accurate within the process is absolutely key, because you can have several tools if they don't speak to each other. Well, at the end, you can just move from one tool to another. So integration is key. We make this integration really easy by developing native integration with the majority of the procure-to-pay tools from the procurement platform, ERPs, and treasury systems. And that makes it so easy for clients at the end, and very valuable.
Wow. Baptiste, that was an absolute masterclass on fraud prevention. Really, really enjoyed it. Is there anything among the different topics we touched upon that we forgot to mention or that you'd like to add?
I think you were pretty good. Thank you again for your time today. Very happy to have this discussion. I think awareness is the most important thing with this new kind of threat. And so congrats for making the treasury world more, being an advocate of all these new topics, and always happy to discuss fraud prevention or other treasury topics. Thank you for your time.
Thank you so much, Baptiste. Speaking of which, if people want to know more about TrustPair, your solutions, or yourself even maybe, where should they go?
Well, so we have operation both in Europe and in the US. So trustpair.com is the perfect contact, and happy to reach out on LinkedIn as well. Always happy to have a new discussion. We attend several trade shows in the US and in Europe. So happy to do this, and always welcome to, if they pass by New York, to come. Our office is in World Trade Center, 50th floor. So there is a great view and great coffee.
Nice, not too bad. I'm going to hold you to this, Baptiste, if I ever come to New York. Thank you so much, Baptiste.
Thank you, Guillaume. Have a great day.